you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is You Unleashed. And the numbers to call to get coaching on having what you want and thriving in every area of your life are 866-254-1579, toll-free in the United States and Canada. That is 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. And as always, we're going to do some table setting before we jump in. And what do I have to set the table with today? Well, we've had quite a time here. Over the last few weeks, we've done George Pransky and I did a productivity weekend here in LA. There was the Three Principles Global Community Conference, which was last weekend. And we have a few more events coming up between now and the end of the year. So November 16th to 18th, small group coaching intensive called Infinite Potential, Infinite Possibilities. And you can learn more about that at michaelneal.org. We've got two spaces left on that. In December, we're going to do a bigger group, the Creativity Weekend, December 10th and 11th, and we'll be exploring how to unleash your creativity and also looking at Creating 2017. And you can do that on its own or in conjunction with our biggest online program that we do each year and the basis for my new book, which will be out next year, Creating the Impossible. So you can learn about all of that at michaelneal.org. The other thing we've got going on this week is I've been doing a masterclass series about transformative coaching. And those of you who are interested in doing the kind of work that I do or in the way that I do it, we had over 1,000 people sign up for it. So there's no room on the live calls, but you can sign up for the recordings and you can do that at supercoachacademy.com and you'll get the recordings of the 5 masterclasses talking about insight and impact, innovation, performance, and results. So what about you? That used to be the ultimate polite British insult. If you went to see a friend in a play or a comedy performance and they weren't very good or you didn't like them, the line was, "Oh, what about you?" But what about you unleashed? What would your life be like if you were not holding yourself back? Now, you might not think it's you that's holding you back, right? You might think it is your circumstances that are holding you back, and there may be some truth in that. You may think it's, you know, your age, or, you know, you're too young or too old. It may be the way you look. You're too pretty or not pretty enough. It may be your brains. You're too smart or not smart enough. It may be your history. You know, somebody like you could never. But in my work with people, and I've been doing work with people for a very long time now, invariably, what holds us back is our own unrecognized thinking. What holds us back is our own innocent misunderstanding of how the mind works and how experience is created. What holds us back is an unintentional and unwitting lack of recognition of the power within us. And so what I find with clients, and I write about this in The Space Within, is there are kind of two questions that I'm always asking in the back of my mind when I'm working with a client that point me towards, you know, what is holding them back. Now, let me actually also quickly add, many people think, well, I'm not leashed, I am free. And you may be remarkably unleashed, and that would be awesome. That would be awesomer. But what if you're wrong? And what I mean by that is, if you give a dog a long enough leash and little enough interest in exploring, they'll never realize that they're leashed, because they'll never get anywhere near the edge. I meet people sometimes who go, "I'm not afraid." And then I'll suggest to them, well, why aren't you doing this thing you say you really want to do? Or, why do you look plaintively off into the distance whenever you talk about this one thing and not do anything about it? And what's actually happened is they've learned to live so far inside their own comfort zone, so far inside their limited sense of possibility, that they don't even bump up into their own fearful thinking, because they never get themselves into a circumstance that their fearful thinking comes up. So what would it be like if what Anne Frank said was true, that everyone has inside of him a piece of good news? The good news is that you don't know how great you can be, how much you can love, what you can accomplish, and what your potential is. What if that was true of you? So, as I said, when somebody comes to me, a new client comes to me, and I'm sort of looking like, where's their edge? And their edge is invariably in some combination of two areas. And the first one is, do they know where their experience is coming from? Because almost nobody does. Like, you listen to Hay House, right? Or you at the very least listen to this podcast of this show. And so you probably think, well, I know, it's thought, right? I've heard you say that often enough, we all know it's thought. But everyone I know, myself included, has exceptions. What we really mean is thought matters. Well, we get that thought is part of our experience, but there are other factors too. I mean, it's thought plus environment. Well, it's thought plus diet. Well, it's thought plus personal history. Well, it's thought plus my husband's negative vibes. Well, it's thought plus my wife's dirty looks. Well, it's thought plus whatever the plus is the edge of your leash. Whatever you think is contributing to your experience above and beyond thought in the moment is where you're lost. And it's innocent, and it's reinforced by everyone around you. You will have no shortage of people who will agree with you that with a husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, mother, father, son, daughter, history, etc., like yours, of course you feel the way you feel. And yet, there are times when you don't. There are times where you're in the presence of somebody being incredibly negative, and it doesn't impact you. There are times where you have fearful thinking come up in you and it doesn't hold you back. There are times, I found it interesting, I was talking about this morning in the this morning in the masterclass, watching the Olympic diving competition this year. And I specifically remember interviews with the American divers about how they handled pressure. And they were talking about, how they'd gotten better at handling pressure and what they did to handle pressure, and of course they had to step up their efforts to handle the pressure of the finals versus the earlier rounds. And then the British divers were being interviewed as well. And they said, well, there really is no more pressure in the Olympics than at home. There really is no more pressure in the finals than in the early rounds, unless we think there is. See, they recognize that no circumstance, person, place, or condition can create our experience. Now, having said that, I bet you those same divers in their personal life still think that it's their husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, son, daughter, father, mother, life history, etc., that creates their happiness or unhappiness. But at least they could see it in that area. And in that area, well, that's the area of their life where they're most unleashed. We live in the feeling of our thinking 100% of the time. We don't live in the feeling of our thinking plus the vibes of the people around us. We don't live in the feeling of our thinking plus our personal history. We don't live in the feeling of our thinking plus what we had for lunch. Like, actually, that was an interesting one. A lot of people think that, you know, food really affects their mood, or food really affects, you know, their state of well-being moment to moment. And there is no doubt you can measure physiological effects of food in the body. However, that doesn't mean that there's a causal link between food and how we feel. And the first time I had an actual experience of this, as opposed to a theoretical thing, is I was working with my friend Paul McKenna on his book that went on to become the largest best-selling self-help book in the universe, I Can Make You Thin. And so I was obsessively researching food, because you know, part of my job was to kind of help find all the science to back up what we'd both seen to be true in working with humans. And ironically, or perhaps not ironically, because I was so obsessively paying attention to food, which normally I wouldn't pay attention to at all, particularly, I wound up eating crap while I was working on it, especially as we got towards deadline. And I remember one day I was working away with him, and for lunch I just had like fried stuff with frying oil on it. Like, I don't even remember what I ate, but it was like the most deep fried meal I have ever eaten. And I felt horrible. I felt sick. I felt bloated. I could feel, you know, the feeling where it's like you can feel the oil coming out through the pores of your skin. And I was hating myself for being such a loser and doing all that kind of good stuff. And then a thought occurred to me that hadn't occurred to me before. And the thought was, what if I thought that deep fried food was good for me? Now understand, I don't think deep fried food is good for me, right? I don't. You don't have to call and say, it's not. I know it's not, right? But I just, that thought occurred to me. And the weirdest thing happened. As I imagined what it would be like if I thought that that had been exactly what my body needed, the perfect food for what my body needed in that moment, the bloating disappeared. The icky oil through the skin feeling disappeared. The dip in energy disappeared. And I felt fantastic. And I went, ooh. Now, it freaked me out. I did not then go around on the convince myself that everything I eat is good for me diet, because I was like, that was too weird. But it did open me up to seeing that even factual things like, well, we know the effect of this food on the body, were secondary in my experience to my thinking in the moment. So one of the ways that we stay leashed, one of the ways that we hold ourselves back, is that we invest an incredible amount of energy in trying to manipulate the world in order to make us feel better. Because we think we need the world to be a certain way in order for us to feel better. And because we're paying so much attention to something that my friend Dr. George Pransky said in a talk last weekend, that's not connected to the drive shaft, right? He used the analogy of, you know, if you move the rear view mirror in your car to the left and to the right, it's not going to make much of a difference to where the car goes because it's not connected to the drive shaft. Well, we can manipulate our circumstances all we want, but unless our thought in the moment changes, it won't make any difference, because our circumstances aren't connected to the drive shaft of our feelings. They're not connected to the drive shaft of our experience. So we spend all our energy on that, or we hear, oh, okay, I'm living in the feeling of my thinking. I'm living in the feeling of thought in the moment. Thought in the moment is creating my experience. Let me control my thinking. Let me take charge. Let me go in and manipulate my head so that I'm only thinking good things and only feeling good feelings. And again, all of my energy, all of my attention is inside my own head trying to manipulate my own experience. And there's not much left to go out and take on the world, right? It's like I've got one hand on what I'm on the steering wheel and one hand on my attitude. And you just do better when you have both hands on the steering wheel. You just do better when you fully engage with life, with whatever it is you're working on, with whatever's alive in the moment, in front of you in the moment, than you do if you're half in the moment and half in your head trying to control your state of mind. And you don't need to. Because well-being is built into the system. Your default is great. Your default is alive. Your default is flowing with the electricity of the universe. But because we get so caught up in the effects of our own unrecognized thinking, we run around with half of our juice. We run around with a low battery, not realizing that there's almost nothing you need to do to recharge other than stop draining the battery. It's a self-recharging mechanism. The minute you're not actively draining the battery is recharging. It is always, you know, let's go old Bob Dylan on this one. You know, he not busy being born is busy dying, right? She not busy draining her battery is busy recharging. Like, that's just how it works. But we don't recognize that, and it holds us back. Now, the other thing that holds people back, the other leash that people are stuck on invisibly or visibly, either in a way that they know about or a way that they don't know about. By the way, I did say I would take callers, and I will, probably. But let me just give you those numbers again. The numbers to call, 866-254-1579. So toll-free in the United States and Canada, 866-254-1579. Or from outside the U.S., dial your country code, usually 001-760-918-4300. So the other thing. We think, if it's to be, it's up to me. We think it's too much trouble. We think it's our little self that has to make things happen. We think it's about our personal power. And we absolutely miss out on the divine, the spirit within, the creative potential, the infinite within us, our higher self, our true nature, our capital S self, the big mind, right? There are names for it in every culture. It is the highest and best within you. It is, in fact, you, unleashed. It's pure consciousness, uncontaminated by your personal thinking, as the enlightened welder Sid Banks used to say. It's a clear flow through of the energy of mind, of the intelligence of life. And you're the conduit. Like, that's the big difference in my experience between people who thrive in a vast and infinite potential and people who shrink. Or they break through and they break through and they break through, but they get a little bit more tired every time. They get a little bit more wary every time. They kind of think of themselves as sadder but wiser. Well, sadder and wiser don't really go together. Sadder and more jaded go together. And wiser and more alive go together. But sadder and wiser is a misnomer. As you wake up to this deeper part of yourself, to this impersonal power at the heart of who we all are as human beings, to that life force and animating force that runs through you and me and everybody else on the planet, which I have no more of than you, and you have no more of than your neighbor, and your neighbor has no more of than the next person. It just stops making sense that you've got limits that other people don't have. It stops making sense to go out with the leash of your own psychology and try to do your best, given how little you are, given how unable you are, given how little access to life force you've got, given how hard it is for people like you, given how whatever it is that feels like the leash on your potential. In many ways, the gift of transformative coaching, of the work that I do, both in real life and on the radio. I know the radio is technically real life, but, you know, it's a little different. The gift of it in many ways is simply realizing that there's nothing that matters that's holding you back. I mean, I heard a great line the other day, and it was from Dr. Keith Blevins, who's one of the teachers of the three principles at the heart of the work that I do. And he said, the illusion in life is not our circumstances. Our circumstances are not illusory. The illusion is that our circumstances can determine our experience, that our circumstances can create our feelings. So I know if you've listened to the show more than twice, you know I am not belittling your problems in a meaningful way. I am not saying, you call that a problem. Look, we live on Earth in bodies. Shit happens. However, that's not what's holding you back. That's not the leash. That's not the muzzle, the thing around your neck, the harness that's keeping you from getting too far ahead of yourself. It's our own unrecognized thought. And what I mean by unrecognized is it doesn't look like thought. It looks real. And it's our not noticing, not valuing, not really seeing our deeper potential and possibility that acts as the leash, that in some way does hold us back, that puts an edge to our world. I remember we moved a couple of years ago to a property that didn't have, it wasn't fenced all the way around. So we put in an invisible fence. And the idea of the invisible fence was that, you know, you put a collar on your dog and that when it walked over this invisible line, it gave it a little shock that was, you know, we're told, oh, it doesn't hurt the dog. And I remember thinking, God, I hate the idea of doing this, but, you know, I don't want my dog to run out into the street. And so we did it, and we did it once. Like, we had the whole thing put in. We spent a fortune putting this thing in, and my dog ran across this line, and it was like there was no marker. I mean, it was just... He ran across this line, and he did kind of a Scooby-Doo, like, and he kind of looked back, like, what the hell was that? And I just said to the guy, dig it up. Get rid of it. We're going to find some other way to keep him safe. Because he thought he was free. And it's so beautiful watching any animal, including the human animal, enjoy its freedom. Right? One of my favorite things to do, and I'm assuming that I don't know what a cat unleashed looks like, to be honest. I mean, I love dogs and cats, but the idea of a cat unleashed is just kind of funny to me. Because, like, you take the leash off my dog and say, okay, and he runs and runs and runs, and it is like pure unbridled joy. And I suspect if you put a cat on a leash and then took the cat off the leash, the cat would not even have noticed that the leash was ever on. But we're more like the dog than the cat, right? Once we become aware that we're bumping into an edge, and then that edge disappears, that invisible line in the sand turns out to actually just be a line in the sand and not wired in any way, not a dead line, just a line, and that we can cross over it with impunity, there's a degree of freedom that comes that is incredible. They did some horrible experiments. They've always done horrible experiments, but these ones were particularly extraordinary to me, into a phenomenon that became known as learned helplessness. And what they did is they would put these rats into this space that could be broken into four quadrants, and each one was kind of marked separately. And what they could do is they were all wired so they could turn on electricity in one. So when the rat would walk into that bit of the cage, it would get a shock. And of course, the rats very quickly learned to stay in just three parts. And then they would do it in the second part, and now the rat would learn to just stay in half of it. And then they'd do it in just one part, and the rat would learn to just stay in the last safe place. Well, then they turn off all the electricity to see how long it would be until the rats would go back out and re-explore. And what they found is, in most cases, the rat never left its little place. It had learned, oh, no, don't go there. And so it now became king of a very tiny little dominion. And that happens to us unwittingly, because we don't understand that the feeling didn't come from the circumstance. We try something and it doesn't work, and we have some thinking about it, and we feel bad, and we think we feel bad because it didn't work. And so we're less likely to try it the next time, and the next time, and the next time. And at some point, we just get used to not trying. And we don't notice that we've changed. We don't notice that we don't have to think what we thought the last time. We don't notice that actually we might be able to walk into the next unknown and thrive, because this amazing energy and intelligence that we are will take over, will be in charge. And so we wind up leashed with this invisible fence, simply because at some point we tried something, felt bad, and thought, oh, that's what happens when I try things. Let's go to Queens, and let's talk to Laura. Laura, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hey, Michael. How you doing?
I am well.
Good. I've been listening to you all week at 11 o'clock.
Nice.
And I'm doing Living from the Inside Out as well with Steph, and it's my fourth time.
Wow.
That I'm doing the same
nice.
Thing. And I saw your videos, you know, back then 3 years ago, and each time I watch them weekly, it's like it's new. So I know you mentioned this morning some of us just see it, and some of us it takes so much longer.
I
think I'm so much longer. And I've been following you for 3 years, and you've helped me a lot, and I've seen a lot of things. And even last year when I was doing all the stuff with my son with college and all the applications and everything else, and oh my God, I thought it was going to go out of my mind. You said, you won't, it'll all come, and it did, and he moved out 2 months ago. And
Where did he go?
He wound up going to a beautiful, we went 14 schools. He got into beautiful schools, Brandeis and all the great schools. He wound up in Manhattan at, it's called the Macaulay's Honors Program, a CUNY program that has a scholarship. He's living in Manhattan.
Wow.
He's like, it's unbelievable. So I've been going through that, and it feels like my heart's been wrenched out of me at times, and I go moment by moment. And I have to get a life, and I work from home. I have to get a life now, and I don't want to. It's so much easier to concentrate on other things. And I have a business that I work from home, and I work for someone else, and for 3 years I'm not getting compensated the way I should. And I've talked about going at something. I've been fighting, seems like, for money my whole life, and I've been working since I'm 15. And I have to say, I'm going to say it out loud, I'm 62 years old. I'm very good at what I do, but I'm tired of fighting for it. And when you say it's in our mind, what happens, it's black and white what happens. No is the answer. No, but I have this other thing, and this last time I haven't gone at it in the last 2 years. And this last time I did a report a couple of weeks ago.
Okay, hang on, Laura. Hang on, just because I'm losing the plot a little bit here.
Okay,
so I get the general situation.
Okay, so happening to me now is in the morning, there's nothing to get out of bed for. Mm-hmm. I've used to get up at 6 o'clock and make my son breakfast and get everything ready, and now I'm laying in bed watching these news programs, which is, you know, wrenching, as you know, and I don't know how to want to get out of this. I understand what you're saying, and I understand that I'm making up this whole story about what's going to happen the next time I go at it, but I'm worn down.
Let me jump in.
Okay.
And I'm gonna tell you a story, but then I'm also gonna talk to you about being worn down. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. So I had a client years ago now who phoned and had a somewhat similar story. He was, as it happened, he was younger, but that didn't help, right? Like he was worn down. He couldn't get himself out of bed. He'd been productive at certain points in his life, but he felt completely unproductive. And I said to him, well, like, what's a typical morning? And he said, oh God, it's terrible. He said, like, I get up at like, I wake up sometimes like 6 a.m. And, if my girlfriend's over, maybe we have sex or we have breakfast or something. But otherwise, I just watch, what's that show with, the Ghost Whisperer. Was that do you know the show?
Yeah.
So it was this really popular show that, he binge watched, in the mornings. And at the time that he was telling me this, I was unbelievably busy. Like I was, my schedule was full. And I remember saying to him, Jesus, right now that sounds like my dream life. And he laughed. But what I said to him is, do you actually let yourself enjoy lying in bed and watching TV? And I was like, well, no, because I need to get up and I need to do stuff, but I just can't. And I just said to him, and I'm not saying this is what you need to do, but I have a point, which I think I'll get to. I said, well, why don't you see what would happen if instead of thinking this is self-sabotage, thinking this is your own wisdom giving you a break, giving you a rest, giving you some space to recharge. And as it happened, over the next 6 weeks, he stopped fighting himself over it. He kind of, what we might say, he indulged it. He stayed in bed and watched TV and didn't really do much of anything. And then he said it was the weirdest thing. He said one morning he just woke up and he just felt great. He hadn't felt great in years that he could remember. And he got out of bed and he started doing stuff. And it was just that. Now, here's why I tell the story. We think we know what's best for us. Like we think, I'm doing this and I should be doing that. So that's clearly a problem. So I need to do something about not doing this so I can start to do that. There is a deeper part of us that does know what we need, but it's usually the one that's actually guiding us to do it. And if you're feeling kind of burnt out and beat up, then maybe that's your own wisdom giving you a break. And it's not a permanent condition. Now, does that have any resonance for you, or does that just sound like a nice story about somebody else?
No, it definitely has a resonance, and it is always about what we should do and what we deserve, and I'm working so hard, but the other part of what I'm saying is I'm appreciating my life, that my time is my own. And not about my son leaving, but about the work that I'm doing, and I work from home, and I'm making enough money just to, to live. I'm in credit card debt, all this other good crap, but nothing, it is about what you're supposed to, I'm supposed to be, I'm doing this, so I should make this money, and otherwise I'm not being true to myself.
So here's a really small distinction that makes a really big difference. Okay? There is a world of difference between what we make up we should be doing and what we deserve and what we can see that we want to be doing and what we want to have. So when you look at, well, I should be doing this and I deserve this and all of that, and I'm not picking on you, Laura, that is a human being thing. That is all noise that we've learned somewhere along the way, and it is startlingly arbitrary. And what I mean by arbitrary is somebody else right now is sitting in a different part of Queens. Queens is pretty big, so I feel safe in saying that. And they think they should be doing the opposite. They think they should be doing less, and they think they deserve something completely different. And it isn't a real thing, the shoulds. It's a learned thing. What is real and what is in all of us is kind of like an inner sense of direction, a simple desire. And if we follow that simple desire, it has its own energy source. It's not reliant on our will to overcome the unfairness of the universe.
The victim.
So here would be my little homework for you, okay? And I'm gonna you know, you can take it or not, but it would be just over the next week to really, whenever you find yourself, as they say, shooting all over yourself, to just put it aside as best you can. Just look for, well, what do I want? What would I like to do today? What would I like to do this morning? You know, what do I want for me? And see where it takes you. And I promise you, it will take you in a different direction than trying to follow the shoulds and reach the deserves and fight through the unfairness of a world that at some point we make up is fair.
I will. Thank you, Michael. That's
Thank
helpful.
You.
Thank you.
You know, it's interesting. I was doing an interview for the next year's Hay House World Summit this morning with a really cool guy who I hadn't met before named James McCray. He's got a new book coming out next year called Shit Your Ego Says. It's a good, fun book. And we were talking about, he shared a story that's an old Stoic parable about, you know, that says essentially we're like a dog on a rope being pulled along behind a wagon. And we can either wish we weren't on the rope, on the leash. We can fight that leash. We can, pull against it, and we'll just exhaust ourselves and continue to be pulled along and maybe even get hurt along the way. Or we can run alongside the wagon. And we can experience the joy of wherever it is that wagon is going. And there's something kind of cool about seeing that us unleashed doesn't mean that we can totally change what life does, right? Us unleashed doesn't mean that if we run out into the street, we might not get hit by a car. Us unleashed means that we don't have to be dragged along behind the wagon. It means that we can run alongside. There was a line of that I really loved that James wrote, which he said, life is not always fair, but it never makes mistakes. And there's something kind of cool about seeing, well, hey, you know what? You're not in charge. But that doesn't mean that you don't have a say. And it doesn't, the first place we have a say comes from our own understanding. When we can see, oh my God, I'm living in the feeling of my thinking. I'm living in the feeling of thought in the moment. No more, no less. I am responsible for this. Not responsible in the sense that it's my fault. Not responsible in the sense that, I need to find better thoughts and choose better thoughts to create better feelings. Simply responsible in it. It's all in me. My experience of whatever I'm experiencing is 100% me. And in any moment, I can experience beyond that. I can experience the bigger picture. I can experience the bigger mind. I can align my little mind with the big mind. And some would say that really they're the same mind at different levels. I can align my will with the will of the universe. I can go where the path is taking me. And I can enjoy the ride. So in that sense, freedom is not rebellion, but it might look like it, because you're not supposed to enjoy this part. You're not supposed to like it. You're supposed to get what you deserve. You're supposed to do what you should do. You're supposed to. Well, if you're not following that path, if you're following an inner path, an inner unfolding. My guess is if you like listening to shows like this, you probably are at some level. Well, that path's going to take you where it goes. That wagon's going to pull you where it does. And if you hitch your leash to that wagon, it will be like being unleashed, because you'll be able to meet every challenge with all of your resources in tow. Not just your personal resources, but the impersonal resource of mind, of the intelligence of the universe, of the infinite creative potential. And that's just kind of cool. Right? That's just kind of a different way of being in the world. It's funny, because on the one hand, I don't like to tell people how to live, because how do I know? Like, I do a pretty good job with my life. Like, I like my life. I like the way I live my life. Doesn't mean you would. But there's something that I've seen about a way of living life that really seems to do something for people. And I write about it in, I wrote about it in The Space Within. And I talked about, each year I take on two or three apprentices. So people who want to kind of do this work in the world, they want to coach, they want to write, they want to teach. And we spend a year together, and we spend a year working together to kind of help them find their voice and do their thing. And then I stay in touch with them over the time. And I started doing this back in 2007. And so over the years, even taking on two or three a year, there's now a nice group. And we try to get together at least once a year. And last year, we got together in London at a club called the Ivy Club, a beautiful club in the heart of London. And it's very Art Deco. It's very 1940s. And we were having lunch in a small library, and it just felt like we'd gone back in time. And I remember looking around the table, and we were all sitting there and chatting, and I'd asked everybody at the beginning, well, what are you up to now? What's next? And pretty much everyone was like, well, I mean, I'm up to this, but I don't know what's going to happen after that. Well, you know, right now I'm doing this, but I'm not sure if that's long term or just for now. And everybody was up to what they were up to, but with no sense of the future, with no sense that, well, okay, I'm doing this, and then the next thing I'll do is that, and then that's going to lead to that, and then that's going to lead to that. And then if everything goes right, that's going to lead to that, and then I'll relax and be happy and successful. Everyone was just doing what they were doing and enjoying the ride. They'd hitched their leash to that wagon, and then they were living unleashed, following that trail. And we were having lunch, and I was looking around, and I got this image of what it might have been like in a barracks of RAF pilots, Royal Air Force pilots, during World War II, between missions. That in a way, you wouldn't have too much thought or concern about the future, because it wasn't up to you. You knew, you were there till the next set of orders came along, and then you'd get in your plane and fly. And you do your best, and hopefully it would work out for the best. And hopefully you could see that you were serving a higher purpose in what you did. But in the meantime, there was nothing for it but camaraderie and friendship, reflection and quiet time, writing to the people that you loved and connecting with the people that you loved, having fun, and just being in the moment, knowing that when the next mission came along, off you'd go, because that's what it was to be an RAF pilot. Well, I often think that that's kind of a beautiful way to live. I often feel that is how I live, that I just kind of am waiting for orders from the inner mind. You know, I'm awaiting instructions for what's next. And I'll know it because I'll know to do it or I'll want to do it, and then I do it. And when there's no mission, like when there's not anything that I particularly am engaged in, well, I'm just here. I'm just with Nina, my wife. I'm just with the kids. I'm just with my friends. I'm just with my dog. And I kind of take that time to recharge, to kind of make sure the equipment's in good working order. You know, I take that time to rest up. There's a saying in the military, you know, that, you know, it's not a saying, it's a thing. You sleep when you can sleep. Like, you just grab sleep wherever and whenever. Well, I kind of think that's true in life. We rest when we got time to rest, and we engage when there's something to engage with. And it's not on us to figure out what's next. It's like another way I sometimes think about it is, you know, I work for Universal Intelligence. But what happens is I forget that I work for Universal Intelligence and I start acting like I'm self-employed. I forget that there is this guiding force within me. And I start thinking, I've got to figure it all out. I've got to make it happen. I've got to be the one who sorts it all out. And it just doesn't seem to be true. And there's a real freedom, in my experience, that comes with being where I am and doing what I do. I remember for years I tried to find my mission. And I thought I'd read something that you're supposed to have a mission. It's good for you. And I came up with some really cool ones. And one of them that I kind of came up with, I liked still. I still like, because it wasn't actually a mission as in something that I hadn't been doing. It was just sort of a recognition of what I was up to anyways. And it was to uncover the secrets of happiness, success, and well-being. To live them in my own life and to share the best of what I learned with others. And actually, I've been doing that since I was a little kid. Now, I didn't choose that mission. I just noticed I was on it. And I like it. It pleases me. So I carry on doing it. But at a deeper level, when I was really looking at it, like, what's the essence of my mission? What's the essence of my mission? What's my purpose? What's my purpose? What's my purpose? I'm sure none of you have ever done that. That's just a me thing. I kind of realized, it came to me one day, well, what if my mission was just to be who I am and do what I do? Now, I don't know if you could put that on a recruiting poster. Right? like those old Uncle Sam wants you posters, you know, oh my God, join the Marines and see the world. And like, I don't know that would be terribly motivating to anyone else. But for me, there's something incredibly comforting about recognizing that my only job in life may well be to be who I am and do what I do, to show up and respond to what shows up. And here's the thing. When I show up alive, when I show up plugged in, when I show up connected up to this deeper energy of life, when I show up unleashed, it's amazing what happens around me. Miracles happen. Now, notice I didn't say I create miracles. I don't think I do. But gosh, the per capita rate of miracles in my general vicinity is very high when I show up alive, when I show up unleashed. And when I don't, when I show up as little me, when I show up as Michael, who's not good enough, or who's much better than everyone else, or who's not worthy, or who's much worthier than everyone else, or whatever version of little Michael that walks into the room, then I struggle like everybody else. Then I get worn out like everybody else. Then I question whether I want to get up and do it again tomorrow like everybody else. And that's in us. That's in all of us. That's in you day by day, that potential, that possibility to show up alive, to show up more alive to whatever is in front of you, and to listen to that space within you, to listen to that inner wisdom, to listen to that inner guidance, to listen to whatever it is in us that's already heading in a direction, that's already up to something. And instead of getting dragged behind, to run alongside, to assume that life may not always be fair, but it doesn't make mistakes. And that's just a different way of being in the world. That's living from the inside out. And it's incredibly peaceful. It's incredibly big. But it's also incredibly ordinary. If it's possible for something to be incredibly ordinary. Right? You're not gonna be in who's who for showing up. But actually, what happens as a result of you showing up alive and connecting with others and responding to what shows up, you may find yourself in who's who. And I'm realizing, like, I don't even know if who's who's still a thing. I don't know if it's been a thing since the 19th century, but there used to be a thing called who's who in America. And, you know, it was a listing of people who'd accomplished great things in the world. So listen, it's been a quieter kind of show today. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm excited next week. I'm going to have my very good friend Mara Gleason on. And we're going to talk about an insight that she had into someday. And if you've been putting off things till someday, then I think next week's show is going to be a real treat for you, because you're going to find out that someday is just a thought. And it never gets any closer, because it's just a thought. And you don't have to wait for someday to live your life. You don't have to wait for someday to do what you really want to do. You don't have to wait for someday to be who you really are. And that's kind of good to know. There's a lot of freedom in that. There's a lot of spaciousness in that. And there's a lot of love that comes through that space. So, check out michaelneal.org. to learn more about me and what I'm up to. Go to the Caffeine for the Soul podcast on iTunes. We're a top 10 self-help podcast on iTunes, and we have new things every week, usually Monday, Wednesday, Friday at the moment. And I'll be back, like I say, with a brand new show next week. Until then, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.